Welcome to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers, and every week I'll be interviewing a special guest talking about how to set up a business or how to launch a new product in the local market. You're listening to Entrepreneur Clinic on Campus FM with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, Steve Dulligan from Just Some Coding. We're discussing apps and how to create successful ones. So, if you have no technical ability, what do you need to consider before actually creating an app from scratch?
Hello. Well, first of all, you have to consider whether you need one. That's the biggest question you should ask yourself. It's not a case of just because you want one, you should have one. It's whether you've got a valid audience that can benefit from it and whether you can drive it to them. So that way we would ensure that you know that you do need one before we start any further discussions, which thankfully most of the time is a need.
A need as in there's a gap in the market and you've discovered that there's...
A lot of the time we would work with people who have established user bases. So they have clients that they'd like to continually reach out to. So they already have an established group of people to target. That assists them because they're going to be continuing their brand awareness and engagement. So most of the time that is a need. When it comes down to an innovative idea, you have to just do more research to determine whether your idea fits what users expect and whether you can, well, obviously, and if it doesn't exist, doesn't mean it shouldn't exist, but just make sure that there's a good opportunity before you invest.
And what if the app you want to create already exists in some form? Is it worth going down the route of creating that app? Not that, you know, if it's your company's own app, that's one thing. But if you're an individual and you have an idea for a game or a service and something similar exists, is it worth pursuing?
There seems to be a lot of repeat apps on the store in every category. But if you look at them, you'll always find that only one stands out, which is the one that got the most attraction, the most marketing, the most or had a novel feature that people connected with. It doesn't mean that just because it exists doesn't mean you can't better it. It wouldn't be right to just because something is out there, because there'd be no innovation if that was the case. But obviously, if you're not able to do anything that can differ, like there's no point in competing with something that is highly established. It would be better to pivot, see how you can attract that audience in a different way, and to come out sort of a complementary to that demographic, as opposed to trying to steal from that large pool, which could be the case.
Okay. So in general, and I know this is a bit like, you know, fishing in the ocean for one tiny fish, what elements actually make a good app?
What we've always found is that we worked on a variety of apps from focusing on teens to focusing on adults. And it doesn't matter what the demographic is, your app has to engage. It has to have the primary needs that it's advertised to have or it's suggested to have to ensure that the person continually engages it. Because every app has to be initiated, it has to be downloaded. It's not, you don't just wake up and find it on your phone. It means you've taken a conscious choice to actually download it. So the reasons that drove you to download it should be enforced as soon as the app is opened and is in use. And as the app grows, it should continue along that path of engaging you in the way that you expect it to.
Okay. And is there anything in terms of the design? Should there be anything there you need to consider? Sort of complexity, colors? Is there anything that works better or doesn't work well?
It's really difficult because design is subjective. So it obviously depends on what you're trying to achieve. Like you may go for a colorful game, which is obviously quite popular presently, and with its general look and feel aimed towards more happy, enthusiastic crowd. Whereas another application may require to be black, dark, attracting a very different person, but as equally important. It just depends on what the service that's being offered, the demographic. It's all about the user. Whenever you're targeting the user, you have to see what would engage them most in this sector, and you design accordingly.
And so in terms of the handset they might actually be using, or the tablet they'd be using, there's any implications there that you need to consider?
Yes, of course. Like if you're creating a phone application because you want people to engage with you via click to phone or SMS features, and typically requires a SIM card or such technology, it's better to not develop a tablet app that can't offer that. unless your tablet app can offer an alternative solution to that scenario, whereby the user can still make contact but not feel that they can't function.
I was going to ask a bit about, you know, getting people to come back and use your app over and over again. What are the tricks of the trade there?
We find that it's important to stand out before you launch, that after having developed many apps for many years, we've realized that it's not about launching and then telling people, it's about telling everybody you're coming so that you can pre-plan. So the primary steps would be to have your app developed, launched, and tested, and user tested considerably to ensure that any adjustments made are all done prior to your official launch date. Market it. Be sure everybody's aware, as many as possible in your demographic, of your icon and your app name and the general concept of what your app is to offer, so that when you do launch, when they see it pop up on the store and it is in the categories that it's expected, the icon and the name will connect with the user and they'll at least engage to learn more about it. That seems to be the more ideal way to launch an application.
And what about making somebody use it over and over and over again?
It comes down to what you're offering within the application. Like, obviously, when the first step is to get connected with the user to make sure that they have connected with your application and they're using it for whatever purpose it is. And it's to ensure that it offers the information that it's expected to offer. So if it's a game, it should be entertaining. And if it's a news app, it should be current.
So you said about sort of planning in advance and pre-marketing, etc. How long does it take to build an app, to create an app?
It's like anything in the development world. It all depends on the complexity of the requirements. If it could be 2 weeks, it could be 6 months, it could be 4 years. It would depend on exactly what is needed to be achieved and to what scale. So everything has to be factored in. First of all, you start with what is your need, what are the requirements, what technology can be used to achieve it, and you build a roadmap.
And so the roadmap includes different functionalities, maybe different graphics, whatever, just to keep the app alive as you're going along, because the mere nature means it's not a printed product that you've got on the shelves, that you can change it as you go along.
You want everybody to, well, you want to release meaningful updates. There's no point in doing updates that have no value. Obviously, there's always a reason to do an update if there's a bug or a fix required, but if there's a reason for engagement, then it should be a good added value that the user will benefit from. And that ensures that the updates are considered when they see it on the store, that there's a new update, they'll engage with it, they'll come back to it. And obviously, you want to keep push notifications to ensure that the user is aware of any of your upcoming plans or general awareness of the application. Yeah, it's just relevant content like it is on websites and anything else. There should be no difference in terms of engaging your users and creating an ongoing user base. Got to keep everybody current.
What are absolute no-nos for developing apps? Are there things that you just, you know, they fail every time if there's something in there, a particular, I don't know, noise or...
I know we've had requests in the past for applications that don't really offer any value. They have a sole feature which would not be considered as really benefiting anybody. And we tend to not take on a project that we wouldn't at least see ourselves in some capacity or people that we know using. We want to make something that adds value to a person's day, not detracts from it.
I actually remember downloading an app which I thought would be super useful, which was a mirror. Mm-hmm. But of course, all it did was turn the camera around for you. But,
yes,
it, you know, I didn't consider that. But the fact that somebody had gone to the effort of actually creating an app that just turned your camera around for you and people like me downloaded it, I mean, the simplicity.
And it wasn't always for free. There was a lot of those that had a payment attached to it. So, like, it all depends on what you achieve, what you plan to achieve, whether the idea makes sense. It's not about cashing in on somebody's idea. Well, for us, it's about trying to add value and trying to do something that people can enjoy and talk about and you know, in general, just have a better day.
So you've sort of prepared, you've got your graphics ready, you've done your marketing, etc. What hurdles are there to get into the stores? Because the stores seem to be very busy with new apps all of the time. How complex is it to get into the Play Store or the Apple Store?
Yeah, I'm not too sure of the quantity of new apps released every day, but when we first started developing on iPhone about 4 years ago, our apps would stay on the launch day for quite a few hours because there was not much competition. Nowadays, I'm not even too sure how many minutes we get, so it's not even a considered launch period because the store is updated so frequently with so many applications that you don't have that opportunity anymore.
So that's when you go into the store and you see latest releases. Apps,
exactly. That used to be something of consequence that you would be able to have a day there. But that sadly doesn't exist anymore.
So going back, we were talking about having a product roadmap mm-hmm. and having changes as you go along, whether it's graphical, bug fixes, there might be a new feature, maybe you're introducing in-app purchases or something like that. Mm-hmm. Does that then make you a new release again?
How does that work? It seems that updates get considered again. That's why it's continually changing because an app, when it gets updated on your phone, is re-downloaded again as a new installation. Whether it's tracked as a new installation or an update, it's not really beside the point. But from a user perspective, if they haven't seen you before, they see it as an update. So, but again, with the frequency of updates coming out, the frequency of apps being released on that day at that moment, you don't really, you're just constantly moving.
You can't
shifting.
Calculate then, it's just exactly. something that... It's
like we used to be able to believe that like around 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock, we'll be listed in the morning, so we would be able to rally around a little bit of marketing around that moment, but that just became lesser and lesser, that it wasn't an achievable goal anymore.
So the actual time it takes to get into the store, how long must one factor into that? And I'm sort of thinking...
So from the publishing perspective?
Yes, because most products you work backwards, so you know your launch date needs mm-hmm. to be X,
exactly,
you know,
exactly.
Valentine's Day, Christmas Day, sure. Mother's Day, whatever.
Sure.
How far back do you need to work to submit sure. your app to the store?
So if you are planning to launch, for instance, like Christmas is the next big season.
Even already from April then?
Well, you have your, say you want to launch on the iTunes store.
Mm-hmm.
That can take, which it's not always guaranteed, but it can take up to 3 months to just get your publishing license as a company. And these things are a terrible timeline when you think you can launch your app in 6 weeks and suddenly you realize that I can't even have my license until twice that time. Now, we offer alternatives to get up and ready sooner, but some things are not always achievable depending on the requirements of the publishing license. So that is a huge time. Now, obviously, while that timeline is happening, you're ideally developing. So that time is not wasted time. It's just something that's happening concurrently. Google Play is a lot more convenient. You can be up and running within a week, a weekend. It's a lot less strenuous to get a license with Google. It's also a quarter of the price. But the prices on the publishing licenses are not a lot. It's $100 for iTunes and $25 currently for Google. And that gives you a yearly license that you can publish as many apps as you want. So as an individual or as a company, that's all it takes to get up and running.
Okay.
But setting up the company with Apple takes a moment. So what we suggest is that obviously we get all of our ducks in a row, get that moving while we're developing so that at the end of the 3 month period, we can be having our license. Again, it's all part of the plan of knowing that we can launch with everything in place so that we have then a good valid period of testing for user feedback adjustments, because every time we make an adjustment to the store, it'll take a further 7 to 10 days to have it approved and released. Again, it's not the same as Android, but these timelines do exist because normally you'd release your apps concurrently or your updates concurrently to ensure that you're being equal with all your users.
So doing Android or Apple, it sounds like Android is a bit more attractive, a bit easier, but is it a bigger market in general?
We understand that Android has the largest devices, the largest volume of devices in the world compared to Apple. And it also has a large user base, but it really depends on what your application, who you're targeting, because if you're targeting young kids, they likely have Androids because it's the more practical choice for a parent, or it's more affordable for them from their own earnings, as opposed to top of the line expenses of iPhone or even the high level Androids. But typically, if you're just comparing Android versus iOS, the cost implication of the device, that is a big factor.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Entrepreneur Clinic on Campus FM with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, Steve Delligan from Just Some Coding. We're discussing apps and how to create successful ones. So talking about costs, how much does it cost to create an app?
Cost is always related to the complexity, to what's needed. So if an app is going to take 4 hours, then it has one cost. And if it's going to take 4 months, it has another cost. It's typically the first question that we get asked when a client communicates with us, is that what are they looking at? And it's a very, very difficult question to ask unless you have all of the facts on what is to be achieved. So what we tend to do is we tend to ask for a list of what is to be achieved, what is the general requirement of the application, what a user hopes to engage with within that application, and what the end goal is. The end goal may be revenue generation, it may be to sell the app to each user at a, you know, per download basis, or it could be offering a subscription model whereby you're going to be selling a service ongoing. So it all depends on what exactly is needed and what the complexity is. So we do ask all these things. And obviously, when it comes to cost implications, like it's not just a development company that has to be the one that creates an application. The mobile companies, if we look at just Apple and Google for a moment, they have released the tools so anybody can download these tools and be operational and explore building an app. We better to see kids in school and universities getting access to these tools in a more structured manner so they can be ready for the market, which is obviously growing at an extensive and sustainable rate, while also those who are just wanting to see what is the nuts and bolts of an application, they can, if they have the time and they have the willingness to learn, they can also start like any other developer in the mobile world. Nobody just knew this. Everybody started with the same set of tools that exist nowadays to learn what to do and how to do it. So it all depends on what is in need. If you have years before you need to release your application, then you could explore it. If you have 2 months, then maybe you can't. It all depends on, again, it's cost is all about the factors that's involved.
And obviously on top of the development aspect, you have the design. Design is a major factor. You can't.
Of course.
Nobody wants an ugly app.
No, of course. Well, there's plenty of those out there.
We should have an ugly app chart.
Yes. We should probably look for one. But yeah, if we were looking at ourselves when it comes to a design workflow, like once we have the requirements of what's needed, we'll structure out what is a wireframe of what is needed, and then we'll color it and define which screen leads to where or which button has which action, how everything connects and how a user should experience it. Presented on a mobile screen, so even from just a very prototype stage, it can be understood just how it will look and feel for a user. And then based on that, we modify, tweak and build.
And I'm guessing as well it would be useful to test it on people, because when you know your app and you know what it should behave like, if you then gave your phone to your mum might get stuck at a certain point, and it's that kind of insight, not just necessarily your mum, even focus groups, should have a go at your app as it's in wireframe stage to see if it works or not for a regular human being who's new to it.
Yeah, like it's always good to explore what somebody who's outside the circle makes of it. Now, the only difference is that sometimes they don't understand what the actual app is supposed to be, so you get sort of a more of a primitive test on workflow, on whether this button stands out enough, on whether this screen transitions with relevant content. So it's about, it's more of a low-level test on usage, whereas when the app is more complete, more functional, less prototype and more beta, ready to be tested by a wider audience, you can get more critical feedback because users at that stage would understand what the app is offering. As you mentioned, a focus group will be more targeted on testing applications, so they would have an idea on how it should perform, and you could get a better handling on what needs to be modified in order to keep a consistent experience for your user.
That's one of the things you just mentioned about the user flow and how things work and how buttons stand out. I developed an app with you a few years ago, in fact, and seeing it on an iPhone, which is what I used, it made perfect sense. But then when we developed it for an Android, which I didn't use, it was Android to me. It really was alien to me.
Yes.
How it worked in such a different manner and how people's brains worked so differently for
exactly.
Something that to me was so, so straightforward.
Exactly. No, that'd be obviously an app, like we tend to, which we believe is the correct approach, an iPhone has an expected workflow and an Android has an expected workflow. And forcing either one to adopt the other only alienates the actual target audience. So what we tend to do is we build for iPhone. We tend to launch primarily for testing and when we're rolling out the device that the company or the project owner or the app conceiver, the device that they have, because they are used to how apps work in their hands. They know when they envision their app, they know how it was supposed to feel. So we build the app that's for them, first of all, because once they understand that the app is in line with their vision, then we can then roll out onto the opposite platform, knowing that all we have to do is maintain the mechanics and experience, but adapt it for that audience, that phone, that workflow.
Okay, so we're talking to have everything prepared, so literally knowing, I guess, pieces of paper almost, like this is the screen, screen A goes to screen B, exactly. From screen B you go to C, from C you can go back to A.
Exactly. The workflow, the wireframe and little lines and arrows will all help, from a visual perspective, achieve, just to understand what we're going to be crafting, how it's going to work. But it's very difficult until you actually have it in your hand to know whether it all came together as you had envisioned it before you had engaged the design company or development company to create your concept.
Okay, so once you've got it up and running, you've done your focus groups, it's up in the store, how then do you get on these, you know, number one for food app, number one for health app? How do you get into those charts?
We believe that if you are creating a solid experience for your users, then your users are naturally your best marketing asset. So you would encourage, like, if your users are constantly engaging your application, if you're constantly, new users are downloading your application, then the stores themselves will be aware of this. And obviously their goal is to ensure that if it's a popular application that has a wider audience as possible. So they will move it up the charts. It will move up organically with usage. But then there are featured lists and other areas where they can pick you out and give you a moment, which is obviously fantastic. It would be the equivalent of the number one spots on Google. It's where you want to be when somebody's looking for your app. And if you use your application and your user base to achieve this, reviewing, rating, all of these things all contribute to users engaging with your application on the store and helping it crawl up the rankings. And alternatively, there's plenty of websites that also offer ranking or even listings of your application in various categories. So some are free, some are paid, but all in all, if somebody goes searching for you on the internet as opposed to an app store, you also have a chance, or a strong chance, of being found and for that user to connect with you.
So that's a case of part of your marketing plan is to make sure you know which of these sites engaging your users to be able to easily rate you. Perhaps that's a screen you have in your app, and choosing the right categories, because you might think you're a food app, but you might come under entertaining as well, or you may also come under domestic bliss. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
There must be various categories.
You have to sit down and do as much research as possible, because all these what seem like small details, they all have a large impact to ensure that your audience finds you where they expect to find you.
So it's great to have good reviews, obviously, and then you can start to, you go up the charts and up the recommended lists. But what happens if you get a negative review? What happens if somebody slates?
Obviously, it's like any review structure out there. It will obviously impact you negatively from your ranking. The unfortunate thing is that on Apple, you can't exactly communicate directly with the person who made the review. You don't have any details to go on in order to try to find what was wrong. And also, sometimes, like, we've had an experience where we had a bug that only one person had experienced, but it was obviously not a very nice bug. And we had no means of reaching out to that person to find out how they experienced it, to ensure that, you know, first of all, we obviously fixed it so they wouldn't experience it again, and that nobody else was having similar experiences but not reporting it. And you're just left a little bit dark on how to accomplish that. Now, you can do an app update and you can add a note to your description and you can hope that, you know, maybe that person will see it. But the likelihood is that once they've pasted a no review or a negative review, then they're not interested in your application, and simply your review list will just be haunted by that moment for then on. The alternative on Android is that you're able to email the user, and you're able to ask for additional feedback. You're able to engage with them. Since Google's a bit more of a social approach than Apple, you can communicate. It doesn't mean you're going to get a resolution, but there is the opportunity of turning that negative into a very strong positive, because you will have known that the user was not happy, that they reported the issue, and that you were able to resolve that issue, and that they acknowledged that you resolved that issue. And subsequently, anybody coming in to see your application while going through the reviews will not only see that you have very positive reviews, but also those that were negative, you did try to resolve, which is what should be done, because people are going to be continuing with your brand, engaging with you, and you've got to have a degree of after-sales service and support.
And most people use apps, recommend apps to their friends.
Of course, it's just everything's viral, everything moves, yeah. Everything gets shared, everything gets talked about.
Yeah. So it's important when you're doing your updates, then if you're doing a bug fix, that you actually list that bug has been fixed as well. So
of course, just on the hoping that that person did keep it installed, that they'll see it showing up on their list when they open their phone that morning, they may be encouraged to try that application again and hopefully change their mind.
Excellent. So thanks, Steve, for joining us this week and helping us through the minefield of apps.
It was great to be invited over. We're very, very excited to be on your show.
Thank you very much. This week, we've been talking to Steve Dulligan of Just Some Coding about apps and how to create successful ones for both the Apple and the Android stores. Next week, I'll be talking to Andy Linus, the manager here at Takeoff, about designed thinking. You've been listening to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers. The programme is aired every Wednesday on Campus FM at 9:30 a.m. and repeated on Thursdays at 1:30 p.m. Join us again next week to hear more about your journey in starting up a new business or launching a new product.